Welcome to the El Arpa podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk. Welcome to the latest episode of the El Arpa podcast. Joining me, of course, is the indomitable Mary, seen in the foothills of the Himalayas. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
So fresh from your dancing exertions last night, I was very lucky to see you perform. So you danced twice in the Centro Comercial, no, Cultural of Antonio Machado.
That's right.
Who is a famous writer?
He was, yes, of course.
What was he famous for? Don't say writing.
Well, poetry in particular.
Yeah? Was he part of Generación 27?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, very good. Can you explain a little bit about your dances? Where do they come from? Because I'm not used to Bollywood and belly dancing in Indian culture.
Well, belly dancing is not Indian, but... No, I mean, we have like from the same group. Well, we have two groups. One is belly dancing, the other one is Bollywood. Completely unrelated. They usually paired up, but there's not much reason for it. Belly dancing is like Arabic, really.
Yeah.
So like Egypt, for example, is quite popular. And Bollywood is, well, there's two types. There's like more classical or semi-classical, which is like based on traditional Indian dance. And there are several styles, and it's pretty much like ballet, let's say. And then there's like Bollywood as such, which is based on all the movies that are produced in India. And all the music that is put in the songs, in the movies, because to be honest, the most important thing, how many people go to the movies based on the music. So like what they do is not like here where you might like the movie and then you buy the soundtrack or whatever. Like there, they release the soundtrack and then songs become hits and then people go and watch the movie.
So. It's funny because I've heard stories of movies being made to market toys or things. Like Transformers is exactly like that. You know a lot more about Bollywood movies, and we're going to be talking about foreign movies in the second part of the show as well. But it works. I mean, you have stories that are coherent and cogent, and they're not like cynical. Or maybe they are. I don't know.
In Bollywood?
Yeah.
Well, there are different types of movies, but your box standard Bollywood movie is like a romantic story, and
yeah,
you know, it's just usually a very. Although there are a lot of action movies as well now, nowadays, but the traditional story was always like an impossible love or something like that. Obviously, in recent years. They're far more. I mean, it used to be that they were very. You couldn't like have any scenes that were mildly suggestive, and that's where a lot of like the dancing comes from like trying to express feelings that they couldn't express. So, for example, like the movement of the eyes, you know, to say that they were in love or things like that, or the smiles. It's all like very innocent. Nowadays, like all those things in reality don't feature as much because maybe they're not as, you know, graphic as Western movies, but still they are quite pretty similar, and there are sex scenes and things like that. So the dances are a lot more kind of like hip hop style, or you know, kind of like detached from the whole gestures and all that, that was trying to be that secret language, you know. It's a bit like we had in Spain with the fans, with like different positions of the fans that to say, you know, I love you or I miss you or things like that.
And now you just have a graphic sex scene.
Well, no, but a bit. I mean, yeah, it's a bit sad to say like that, but I think that also has an influence on the dances, because the dances are a lot more as if it was any other choreography for like hip hop or you know, Latin dance or whatever. While before it was a lot more to do with symbols and even gestures. We use a lot of gestures in the choreographies that are to say, for example, thank you, or that you do with your hands.
Yeah.
And an elderly Indian person would know that is thank you, or that is, or that is blessings, or I miss you, or things like that.
So the choreography you generally do with the dance school is from the traditional Bollywood style, more so than the modern iteration.
We do both, but when it's the modern one, it's always, I mean, yesterday we danced a classical one and a modern one. And if you remember, the modern one was like very, it's like very party-like, and you know, there's like it's all based about like it's all based on like expressing joy and, you know, and just having fun, and it's all very festive and all this. And well, the other one we did, the first one we did, it's not that it was depressing or anything, but it was more about even the words of the song. The other one, the words, half of them are in English, and it's like, you know, let's party. And in fact, it was a song for Diwali, so it was like to celebrate Diwali and all this. But the other one, the classical, was a song about, you know, I love this person and he ignores me and, you know, now he's nice to me, now he's not, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So it was more about, you know, the girl being in love and saying, well, I don't know if he loves me, and, you know, all these things. Why are you laughing?
You sound very dismissive of that.
No, not dismissive, but not dismissive, but it's something that, of course, now it's quite removed from our like current culture, for example, for movies.
Yeah.
And it's got a point which can be a bit too, you know, I don't know, corny or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. For me, from an anthropological point of view, which is how I always look at things, the thing of the gestures that mean different things is quite significant, because, for example, in Egypt, I had the same. I had many elderly people that did gestures to me, you know, like, or would touch my forehead, and I didn't know what it meant. And then, and then people explain, well, it means like God bless you or things like that. So,
okay,
I think that's quite nice. And I don't know, like, for example, our teacher puts a lot of emphasis on making sure that the gestures that we do or the choreography fits the lyrics.
Yeah.
You know, so that if in Hindi it says something like, I'm grateful for you, that we do the sign of I'm grateful.
Okay.
So I think that's nice, because it sort of like keeps in tradition with the culture.
Okay, very interesting. Well, you did a great performance yesterday, so well done.
Thank you.
So it was very difficult to make a video there, because everybody was... Well, I was getting in everybody's way, apparently, with the camera. But all the grannies flicking my ear from behind to get out of the way. But we got the job done anyway, and we finished editing that. That should be up on YouTube today or tomorrow. So very fascinating background into Bollywood culture and movies. Reason I kind of brought up as well is because not only did you do it yesterday, but also, we'll be talking about Cold War, which is one of the contenders for the Oscars. And we spoke about Roma before as well. And I read something in the newspaper today about how most people, I think last year in the UK, 2% of the movies seen were foreign movies. I think more or less the figures, and most of that was to do with Bollywood. So like a lot of movies don't get a look in. So yeah, so that is kind of, it penetrates the market more compared to movies from other cultures. But that being said, Cold War was a movie we saw last Thursday as well, and I think we both thought it was good in certain respects, had a lot of merits, and we'll discuss that in more detail as well as other things in part two. So join us after the musical interlude, and we will be talking about all things Cold War and stuff. Welcome to part two of the show, and I think I'm going to change how I say that. So I was like very stylized, very formal. Wait, okay, I was fast.
No, because you say you're going to change it. Go on then.
Welcome to part two. More natural.
Okay.
Yeah, I just like, welcome. Ah, I hate myself sometimes. Anyway, where did that come from? Oh my God. Hidden psychosis there. Dark is the tone of my history. No, not me, despite what I said. Sadiq Kawaish Al-Faraji, I butchered that, so sorry. In your likely event that you are listening to this, this is an exhibition in Casa Arabe, which is a beautiful kind of cultural house in Madrid. It was your suggestion to go there. Can you give us the background to who this man is and what this exhibition was about?
So it's an Iraqi artist, and the main thing that he bases his art on is like cartoons, really. And drawing, he's like a drawing artist, and he's from Iraq. And I think obviously he says dark is the tone of my story. Well, because basically pretty much he's determined by war and all the events of that have happened in Iraq.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story because he, as you said, mentioned, he's a refugee, and he's made three movies based on his illustrations, two of which are there in Casa Arabe. So the first one was definitely the most impactful, the second one less so. But to give this guy his context as well, they do a great job of kind of filling in the broad strokes of thousands of years of Iraqi culture. They mention the great epic Gilgamesh, which you have read.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read it, but I've seen Michael Wood's BBC program about epics, where they kind of give a synopsis of it, and I think we're on the same level of understanding about
sure,
the text.
Sure, probably you know more.
Well, no, it's fascinating because they say how that is the novel, the book that first introduces the idea of the mortality of humans as a counterpoint to the immortality of the gods, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a sparse exhibition, but you can imagine because they're putting it in there, that is something that directly or indirectly informs his work, because of course it's dealing with the themes of being a refugee, of leaving your homeland, and of course leaving your family behind as well. And you know, we saw a video of a guy from Lebanon who originally came from Palestine who opened a chess shop in New York. It's a great video on The Atlantic, that magazine's YouTube channel. And he also talks about being a refugee and having experienced suffering. And you know, so even though he doesn't really articulate the suffering that he witnessed in this exhibition, you can imagine that a lot of refugees have a very similar story of how they get to their new lands and the things that they've escaped and witnessed. So my point is, like, they're bringing Gilgamesh into this story, into this dialogue between us and the artist, I guess, and this delicate balance between life and death is definitely something that's ever present, because things are hanging on a knife edge, on a balance, because in one sense he's in the Low Countries. They don't really specify where he ends up, but you know, he gets a letter from his nephew, no?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the subject of the first video. And the kid is like saying basically how he can't wait to be with his uncle, be reunited with him, and kind of elaborating on his hopes and dreams. And then that produces this fever dream, this stream of consciousness based on his images that he's kind of collected while he was traveling, and into this epic story of these two places side by side, and absolutely beautiful, because he kept a diary as he was traveling as well, and this diary took the form primarily of images and drawings, and this is what kind of fed into this first video. I found this video beautiful, and I know you did too. So before I kind of explain why I thought it was, you know, amazing, what were you reacting to when you were watching this particular video?
I just thought it was really dynamic in the way it expressed how thoughts work, and you know, the main focus of all the story was like this face looking up, as if it was, you know, the face of somebody looking that lying down, and you know, the typical thing that you do when you're just lying down, eyes open, and kind of like thinking about a lot of things, and it made you think that it could have been, you know, the first time he basically arrived in Europe, and he just like that, and all these images and all these thoughts of everything that had happened ever since he left were just going through his head. And I thought what I found most fascinating was how things like morphed into other things. And
that's the thing, yeah.
It was always like alternating, you know, happy thoughts or things that reminded him of home, and then suddenly that thing would turn into something ugly or something dark, and that would like make him feel bad, and then all the environment, like all the surroundings would turn, you know, ugly, just the way he felt. And I thought that was like quite amazing, because it was just as if you were following that change in that shift in like moods, and it's just really the way like the mind works, because when you're thinking about something and you've gone through a lot, you've got a lot of things in your head, and then something like leaving like your homeland can be a right mix, even more so when it's all like in such a traumatic way, it can be a right mixture of happy memories and you know, yearnings and horrible feelings and feelings of guilt and all these things like mixed.
Yeah, well, that's two. You said a lot of interesting things there. I'll choose two to respond to. In that chess video, you know, this guy is successful. He has a chess shop. It's a point for people to meet, but he carries the scars with him. We mentioned in a previous podcast, a BBC podcast about refugees and how they opened up ice cream stores and tea shops in England. Very nice podcast, you know, and like a lot of them are successful as well. But, you know, to varying degrees, they show the dark side or the scars that they carry with them. And in this exhibition, it is more apparent. And what you said as well, how they morph into different images, is truly breathtaking, because you know, it's like seeing something that is in a way simplistic and in a way kind of makes sense why it's turning into. But just the artistry in which it's done, and the fact that it's happening before your eyes seamlessly and without seemingly any effort, it just seems so organic and natural. And that is the key to finding it very compelling and very artistic. And you mentioned, yeah, I mean, for example, there's some interesting imagery there. There's a lot of trees in there. And you were mentioning to me in the exhibition that in his culture, mountains would be the landscape that would crop up quite often in stories. And I was thinking maybe, well, there's a double metaphor here. I mean, if you're from his culture and watching this video, that'll be a stark contrast to what you're used to seeing. And for us, you know, there are points where he's being buried by these trees in the forest. I imagine in where he is, the trees would grow very close to each other as well, and he's like covered by the snow and all these things. And but even like simple things where like he could draw a line, and then like as a line gets thicker and thicker as he emphasizes it as well, just it's so just natural and organic. And obviously, even though I think we are describing it well, it's very difficult to do it justice without actually seeing it, but it is the testimony, and a different one as well, of a refugee. You know, I haven't seen many kind of graphic novel style testimonies of these, you know, great movements of people, but this is definitely one. I mean, if you've ever seen Persepolis, which is of course about Iran, not Iraq, but very similar art style, so that should give you a picture of what it looks like, you know.
Mm.
Before we talk about the second video in that exhibition, is there anything else you want to say about the first one?
Well, just about what you were saying of like how things more so naturally and so organically, I think that also mirrors like the way thoughts work, because basically when you're looking at it the first time that you see it, it's like, for example, I remember like there's something that starts forming and then it turns into like a bird, into a dove, and then it's a more peaceful feeling after something quite ugly. And I think that's quite interesting because you start seeing how like a thought starts becoming weaker and you don't know what a thought is turning into, and then suddenly you're faced with how you feel the next stage in your mood, and that's
Yeah.
often the case when you feel something very strongly and for a while you cannot like make sense of how you actually feel or what that feeling is turning into.
That's a very interesting point. And also as well, there's a lot of ways of reading what you do see, because it is, as you mentioned, an organic stream of consciousness kind of thought process of how it morphs into different things. But it's very difficult to, like, if some images are being buried, is he being buried by the guilt of leaving family behind, or is he being, or is he burying that guilt, which is different, you know? Is he trying to bury that and not feel it, or is he feeling it, and is that feeling burying him, you know? Or maybe it's a little bit of both, for example. So, and I guess it is true, because I mean it's very difficult to really understand another person. I mean, Otto Frank, Anne Frank's, is it Otto Frank, I think, Anne Frank's father said the same thing when he discovered her diaries after the Second World War. I mean, how well does a father truly know his daughter, and how well does one person know another person? And in the case of hearing the testimony of a refugee, how well can we truly understand it? And when you're being confronted by these kind of abstract, well, maybe not so abstract, but these images, it does put you in this position where you're grasping to fully understand what is happening. And I think, you know, if that was done with words, you know, not that we think we know what it's like to see our city bombed or having to escape through a frontier, but it probably would seem more relatable in a way. So I think that kind of distance between us and him is also relevant through the style of the art. You know, it's pictorial evidence rather than written evidence, for example. Now, as we mentioned, he has three videos as far as we know. Only two are in the exhibition, so that means the second one, which is about the hunter and the hunted, or the hunter and the prey, a kind of duality of love, the person who's kind of chasing the person who's being chased, two faces facing each other, and all these kind of abstract images as well. I don't know, obviously for both of us, I don't think we felt really much for it, but maybe it's plugging into an ancient storytelling kind of mechanic, you know, where you have like the princess or whatever. I don't know. I'm spitballing here, but like being kind of pursued by somebody. That's a classic kind of love story archetype, you know. But nevertheless, you know, it didn't really speak as much to us, I don't think. So I don't have really have much to say about it. So I'll give you the last words on it, and then we'll talk about the wonderful bookshop there.
Well, I think very true. I think the second one was commissioned, and I don't know, but somehow I feel that when you are commissioned to do something, it's a bit like when you're writing something to enter a competition. It's almost as if you're trying to make it very nice aesthetically, and you're trying to say a lot. But it doesn't flow as naturally, and perhaps this is a bit unfair on the artist. I don't know, but I think I liked it a lot more. I like the other one a lot more because obviously after you've seen the other one, and as you were saying, there are things where by no means we've experienced what he has done, but there are things about like feeling sad, about feeling confused or guilty that everybody can relate to, and that was portrayed really well through the cartoons. And then when you go to the other one, it's like it's interesting in that, for example, it extracts a lot from myths and from the history of Iraq, and well, puts that into a video with a lot of images and a lot of things that are in like people's subconscious, but somehow it like feels nice as a study of, you know, that particular subject that he was concerned with at the moment, but by no means with the emotion that you found in the other one. So perhaps like the way it is displayed kind of like also leads you to, you know, because you start from like a very emotional point where you read about the biography, and then you have a big, very big picture of a very big drawing of that boat that is Ali's boat, that is his nephew, the one that wrote the letter to him and prompted that whole diary and artistic production related to his trip from Iraq. So then when you go to the other side, it's like, okay, like, you know, this is like, okay, this is interesting, but obviously you're not going to engage with it the way you engage with the other half of the exhibition, I think.
Okay, well, yeah, I think that's true. Also, as well, I don't know, I mean, it's also something that's very subjective, while themes in the first video are more universal.
Yeah.
So it depends on how you perceive the idea of love as well, and that kind of dynamic between the two suitors or whatever. But speaking of Casa Arabe, you bought a wonderful coloring book for your mother. Absolutely stupendous. It's a beautiful shop. It has like a rows of books, a little ladder, like an ancient library you can fly around on, and some beautiful notebooks and all that kind of stuff. But well, while time is precious, we should also talk about Cold War. So we're moving from Iraq to Poland. Now this movie is also, because we mentioned Roma in a previous podcast, and that is an amazing, amazing movie. Cold War, I think, also is very beautiful technically in a lot of aspects, but the story maybe isn't as compelling as that of Roma. And you're giving me that look. I'm saying that to set you up to talk about it.
I know you are.
Not necessarily my opinions. But
I know
no,
you are.
But no, I do agree with you. But well, since we've already let the cat out of the bag on that one, where you're going to be talking about that, why don't you?
Okay, well, I think my big issue there was that I thought visually it was stunning. I haven't watched Roma yet. This is a very important thing to highlight. But yeah, I mean, there were so many scenes that were, you know, like very engaging and very, very artistic, and well, the composition, the light, you know, the whole photography was gorgeous. I think my issue was that I didn't feel the story was as, and I want to say solid for lack of a better word, but it was missing something for me. You know, it just, we cannot really say very much without, you know,
giving away spoilers.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know, like the main relationship in the story, the main focus of the story, or practically the only focus of the story, in a way, didn't do it for me, you know.
Well, we had a huge conversation about this.
Yeah, I'm summing up very much, but
last Thursday.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we gave away spoilers with Roma, so I guess we could give away spoilers with this. But apparently, it's also very similar to a Roman Polanski movie. I can't remember the name of that, but I've been told that the story is quite similar. Mm-hmm. It even has the same ending. Now, yeah, I mean, just the symbolism, the photography, you know, it's just something about it that, you know, like Roma has this natural style of filmmaking. Now Roma is different because it had this kind of tableau where the camera was like a distant observer and things were happening around it. And in a way that, you know, almost similar to the exhibition that we were mentioning in the first part of part two, just seeing these things unfold. I mean, they're everyday scenes, but it's just incredible how they do unfold. And I've heard criticisms of this movie because apparently nothing happens. But then again, you know, life is like that, where a lot of things don't happen. And I mean, the Cold War is very interesting in that perspective as well, because, you know, there's movies, you know, and other things that we've been talking about in other shows and also just off air that show these kind of, you know, previously undocumented aspects of conflicts. And, you know, if there's a great political upheaval in Mexico, what does this, you know, indigenous servant, you know, what's her life like as that's happening in the background? Or in the case of Cold War, if two lovers get separated because, you know, across the division of Cold War, what does that do to their relationship? You know, I mean, because when you think of the Cold War, you think of the Bay of Pigs, you think of Che Guevara, you think of you know, campaigns in Latin America, Africa, you think of those things. You don't really think of the human aspect of it. I think that is noteworthy that they are exploring that story. And I've heard also, like, I mean, for example, you know, and these are things like that, you know, sometimes for people, because of either position, like in Roma, some of the characters are ignorant of what's happening because they're in a bubble, or because, you know, human nature as it is, sometimes great events are the backdrop to affairs of the human heart because they're so wrapped up in the, you know, in this other person. And it's just fascinating to see that as a backdrop, like literally as a backdrop to that as well. In terms of the characters, it's like, it's, yeah, I think I agree with you. The love story in a way doesn't make sense, you know, particularly from the perspective of the woman, because she isn't very expressive, which they even mention in the movie. And it's not clear why she's, you know, like that she does feel this deep love, while him, like the actor, is a lot more adept at expressing that with just a look. There's one scene that we spoke about last week as well, where he, you know, she's singing in a cafe in France, and he is playing the piano, and she finishes, and he just looks at her with a deep look of love. He just looked like a man who was completely head over heels with her. So maybe it's a case of acting, or maybe it was a choice that, you know, that's just her character. The character doesn't express those things, but she feels them, and she's kind of all mixed up as well. We're talking about as well, like, why were they attracted to each other? You know, but I was trying to say perhaps because he wasn't really a communist, she was someone who's had been in prison. Again, this isn't a spoiler, this is revealed pretty early on in the movie. So even though we kind of are not in that situation, this kind of communist country, you know, so maybe it isn't as obvious, but for the characters that are in that situation, they probably stood out to each other very dramatically because they were outsiders, and that probably is the root of their relationship, and something that is kind of true throughout the course of the movie as well. So yeah, and in terms of the technicalities of it, like, I love how, you know, because like in Rome, as I mentioned, it's just kind of like the camera is a background observer, while here it's more hands-on, but the perspectives are amazing. You have, like, there's one scene around the boat in the Seine, and the camera's just kind of sweeping. But there's a lot of scenes where just like the camera just hangs on like a group of people, and it's just like it's just staged very nicely, and you can hear like the wind going through the grass, and it just seems so real as well. And it's a very, like, when movies are like that, for me, I just completely get hooked in the universe of those movies. In a way I can't really fully describe, but it just they have that powerful effect on me, you know. In terms of like the technicality of it and the historical interest, I think, yeah, it's a really great movie. I think the characters are interesting, the love story is interesting as well, but yeah, I mean, I would share your kind of complaints or doubts about that main love story as well. So yeah, I think it's definitely worth a shout for me. Not as good as Roma, but still quite a good movie. As well, so
Okay, well, I think we've expressed our opinion quite fully there, as much as we can say. But well, I think it's definitely worth a watch, and you know,
it's
just
definitely,
like draw your own conclusions. But
yeah.
yeah, I think it's definitely worth watching it, and you know, and even if it's just for like a pure joy, as you were saying, of like entering that universe of you know, something very beautiful visually.
Well, also just to also link it to the other topics as well, you know, in the chess video that I mentioned, and also in this exhibition, you know, you've chess in that, you know, your artistry in the exhibition. You know, as a refugee, you bring this universal language with you, and you know, art always expresses things, you know, in any language, because art is, you know, it transcends that. Same with chess as well. If you know how to play it, of course. That's an important caveat. But and him as well, because he does, like, well, again, this isn't really a big spoiler, but he gets exiled in Paris, and you know, he plays music there. So again, music is his kind of international language as well. And even he says to her, "Well, you come with me. You learn French. You've great ears. You have great listening for music." And again, it's kind of another component of how music is international and can even help you actually learn
Adapt.
Adapt a language, for example. So yeah, we've run out of time in part two. It's been pretty solid. And another movie I'd recommend that we won't go into detail here, but it's a Uruguayan movie called 12 Nights. 12 Noches de. I can't remember. What is it? 12 Nights de. Oh no. 12.
Años.
No, 12 Years of Night. That's what it is. Oh, thank God. Okay, so, well, as I said, we won't go into much detail about that, but it is an amazing, amazing movie as well. Simply because, it's historically interesting, but also just how they play with sound and the technicalities of it as well. Just make the story absolutely amazing. And then, when you're finished with those movies, you should watch Avatar 2 or something. Okay, so, well, from Avatar 2 to Part 3, now the musical interlude. So welcome to part three of the show. Badgers, what do you know about them?
That they're not Irish.
Well, the Irish badgers originate from Spain.
Okay, everything in Ireland originates from Spain.
Pretty much.
Weird.
They're our closest cousins, according to a very recent study. And the study took in bovines, other animals, and yes, even badgers. And for some reason, the badgers in the UK are not from Spain,
but from Ireland.
but the Irish ones from Ireland are from Spain, yeah. So there.
There you go. Well, fact of the day.
If there's ever a justification for self-determination for this island, I there it is. So yeah, because we did an article on the blog irishsliceofmadrid.com about the kind of similarities between Irish and Basque music. In many ways, they're quite different, but in a lot of ways, they are quite similar because they are both badges of national identity.
Badges.
Not badges of national identity, badges of national identity. And people like might wonder, why did badgers come over?
You were doing that on purpose, weren't you?
Of course I was, yeah. But they're vicious animals, of course. And so people are like, how could they come over? And it's just like, well, they're used for hunting.
But there's
So,
something occurring to me now, like there's still badgers in Ireland.
can you stop badgering me about the badgers?
But there aren't any more, are there? Don't think so.
I don't think so, no.
Okay, now it's freaking out because
Yeah.
suddenly I thought that I don't think there's badgers anymore in most of Europe.
Well, let's think of it. They're collateral damage when St. Patrick got rid of all the snakes. So
He just destroyed all the fauna, the whole island.
Unintended
The whole
consequences.
island.
So yeah,
Okay.
anyway, the
Yes,
article is,
sorry, the article.
don't worry, it's about a guy. Well, it kind of focuses on one guy who lives in the Basque Country now from Ireland. He picked up Basque instruments, and they have a group where they sing about Basque things and Irish culture, and also satirizing things such as the Celtic Tiger. But there are a lot of examples of groups that kind of have this fusion of Basque and Irish culture. And also, I think what's interesting is I go into in the article the session culture of Ireland, how we go to the bars is very different from how it happens in the Basque country and also in Spain, where people tend to kind of bar hop and have a
Oh,
caña
yeah.
and go from one place to the other. While in Ireland, it's always in the same place, the same day. People sit in the same place as well, and if one of them passes away, they kind of keep that seat free as well, and they kind of have a they're more familiar with the repertoire of music. But you know, more or less though, like they can graft onto each other and become one, one could say. So it's, yeah, it's an interesting thing. You really liked it, and this is interesting because you call it solid, which in English is always like solid is like 3 out of 5 mediocre, but of course you meant like weighty, meaty.
Like, honestly, you know what reference you say is, he backed up his argument with solid facts. Well, there you go. That's very positive.
Yeah, when it comes to facts and evidence, yeah, it's perfect. But when it comes to like a work of art or creative, okay, it's like, oh, it's solid. Or they're a solid football team. You know, they're like, okay, Everton.
I think you can explain later.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. So anyway, we have a solid platform on which we can be found. So you can take it from here.
Radio Public.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, if you listen to us on Radio Public, you support what we do and help us keep going with what we do.
You can also find us anywhere you find our podcast app, but through Radio Public, you do help us financially. And also on Patreon, you can do the same. You can find us on irishsliceofmadrid.com, which is our blog. And lrpmedia.com is the website. Almost forgot that. And as
you,
I said,
doing my trick of going quiet.
As we said at the first part of the video as well, we mentioned the Bollywood dance routine. That video, by the time this is published, will be on our YouTube channel, and we'll put a link in the description of the podcast as well, so you can see the performances basically, and the intro, which features a close up of lights. Very artistic. Anyway, so that's it for this episode of the Alarpa Podcast. Thank you so much for all your insights and conversation and conviviality, my indomitable Mary. So return thee to the Yeti foothills, and I shall join you next week for the other podcast. So this is me saying good luck.
I'm saying bye.
The Alarpa Podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk.